From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of November. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Jackie Vex is out of the office today. Gary Schnitke from the U of I will join us to talk about his latest article for the Farm Doc Daily website. Takes a look at USDA's updated long-term forecast for prices of corn and soybeans. And as we close out our time together, Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, corn futures finished the day with the nearby December contract at $4.17 and a quarter, down 5 3/4 of a cent. March 4 lower at $4.27, and the May at $4.31 and a quarter, 3 1/4 lower. July down 2 3/4 at $4.32 and a quarter. Next year's December, a half lower at $4.05 and a quarter. Soy complex, nearby contract November beans up a nickel, $11.43 and a quarter. The settlement price January 6 1/2 higher at $11.52 and a half, and July up 8 at $11.44 and a quarter. November beans up 7 1/4 at $10.32. Bean oil $1.07 higher. Bean meal down $2.10. Wheat futures July soft red down 9 at $6.04 and 3/4. The hard red at $5.72 and a half, 6 3/4 of a cent lower. Live cattle futures were 52 1/2 higher, and the lead December feeders were down 25 cents. And lean hogs on the day were 32 1/2 cents lower. They settled at $64.80. We're now joined by Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Hey, Chip, thank you so much for joining us today. We really do appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Todd.
As we look at the marketplace for the day, it appears that wheat suffered the largest losses. Why was that the case?
Yeah, I think wheat has been a little bit of the weak link, so to speak, all along here for the last couple of weeks. Did get some word out today, finally, and this is what the market's kind of been waiting on, Todd, for a while here, that Russia will place a quota on its wheat exports starting February 15th through the end of June of 15 million metric tons. I believe that's about 5 million metric tons less than the amount they exported a year ago in that time period. So, you know, obviously there were some problems with wheat production in that area, but big picture, it may not quite be as bullish or as restrictive of an export policy for Russia than what the market had hoped. So you're seeing some selling pressure across the wheat market today, and I think that spilled over and helped drag corn off its recent highs here, or at least highs from the overnight as well.
Yeah, those highs, of course, made after yesterday's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate report increased exports for corn from the United States pretty dramatically. That was good news, I suppose, if you're a corn producer. However, the question is, how long-lived can that kind of bullish news remain in the marketplace?
Yeah, you know, I think what it does, or at least to me, what it did with the tightening carryout in corn and beans both, is just raise the bar on the next, say, 70 to 80 days of weather in the Southern Hemisphere. It requires now a big crop out of both Brazil and Argentina to help give a little bit of cushion back to world supplies. And it just makes it, I guess, that much more important that we do have those big crops. So can we hold these gains? Probably. Any correction probably is going to be met, like you hinted at, with some end user pricing. Now that, you know, 3 months ago, the world and especially the corn market thought we'd have maybe approaching a 4 billion bushel corn carryout, and now we're well under 2 billion. So the end users on breaks will be coming after this thing. But a lot of this is going to hinge on the next 75, 80 days of weather in South America and what size of crop they can produce down there.
The United States Department of Agriculture estimating that the 2021 crop year will end with 1.7 billion bushels of corn in the bin and about 190 million bushels of soybeans. Neither of those numbers are actually very big. Do you suppose that soybeans, as the ratio to corn for new crop, will manage to close in soybeans' favor over time here?
Yeah, I think so. I think what I would take that back to is it depends on what we talked about earlier, and that's the Southern Hemisphere crop. They're off to a very, very dry start down there in both Argentina and Brazil. If they're fighting that a month from now, say right ahead of Christmas or right on the first of the year, if they still have dry weather, absolutely. It's going to require a lot more acres of beans here to help make up the surplus, so I should say the shortage of world stocks. So I think, again, not to, to put too much emphasis on this, but it is very important. Depends on what the South American production says. But I think in general, just domestically, given the carryout, you can make an argument that the USDA yesterday leaving demand unchanged probably was a little bit of a gift, and that, you know, arguably they could go up a little bit on demand in on the January report and cut that carryout even tighter. Probably does mean that beans have to gain on corn from a new crop perspective to try to ensure those acres. But what we've done is set ourselves up for a really big acreage battle going into spring here in North America.
So you're expecting higher prices in the future?
Well,
or you're expecting the ratio to change?
Yeah, I think the argument is that that bean, the ratio, the corn bean ratio from a new crop perspective probably is going to continue to favor beans to try to get those acres. I think, do we go higher than this? A lot hinges on, again, what the South American crop is. What our final crop is at the on the January crop report is going to be a big player in that as well. If we continue to see small cuts in yield and increases in demand, it's going to cut carry out tighter and increase the likelihood that we do push those new crop prices of corn and beans higher.
I'm going to delve into this one more time just really quickly. Did the trade accurately reflect in $4 corn the 1.7 billion bushel carryout ahead of time?
Well, I think the market was leaning towards a cut in carryout and a cut in yields, but the sheer size of the drop that we saw in yield and the big jump in demand, I don't think the market was quite prepared for that. There's a lot of people saying right now, very disappointed in price action today, given the bullish report in corn. So maybe a lot of that was factored in with expectations of shrinking carryout. I think, though, long term, though, anywhere you cut it, $1.7 billion and maybe shrinking, arguably, if they continue to drop this in January, as far as the yields go, the breaks will be well supported. And you know, any other bullish news is going to drive us to higher highs in the near future.
Are there things that you're concerned about? For instance, COVID-19, ethanol and gasoline usage.
Yeah, I think that's under the backdrop of all of this. Obviously, if you look back 4 months ago where we thought the market could be, we're at a much better level right now. But we can't stick our head in the sand and just be, you know, permeables here. I think there's a lot that goes in it. Still, this election, there's going to be a legal battle. That could cause some financial market volatility. The financial markets themselves, with all the money printing that we've seen here recently and possibly another big stimulus coming, potential COVID shutdowns. You know, the state of Illinois, I just saw today a new record hospitalizations. The governor has hinted that, you know, an at-home order may be something he considers. So any return to that obviously is going to really put another damper on the ethanol markets. Also, quietly, we've seen the basis really slip away in some areas. Maybe there's enough corn in the system. Maybe we've got to a level that futures have done the heavy lifting here and generated the cash movement. But yeah, we're not without risk here. South America, we're very much in a weather market, and better rainfall down there really could take some of the steam out of our corn and bean market as well. So plenty of risks out there from a worldwide perspective, not all just within the fundamental grain side of the equation either.
Thank you so much for filling in. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Todd.
That is Chip Nellinger. He is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Yesterday, he penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can find it now if you'd like at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, walking through some of the long-run price forecasts that have been put out. Gary, thanks so much for being with us. Can you tell me about the article?
Yeah, so this is, by the way, this is USDA's long-run forecast. So they release that out every February. And yeah, it comes into play with what those new plateaus are and what we are actually looking at. This year, we got the February 2020 long-run forecast. And then USDA just released in November the preliminary new forecast for 2021. Onward. So we're reporting on both of those.
What did you find?
So if you're looking at what USDA said in November, and we're again looking at USDA or US national prices, market year average prices, what you could say is that the November forecast says the long run prices will be $3.55 for corn, $9.80 for soybeans, and $5.10 per bushel for wheat. And that would be USDA's forecast for the next 10 years, sort of going, that would be their long run plateau, if you will. We'll see some, if they're right, see some bobbles around it, but that would be their long run forecast.
How does this forecast compare to the previous one?
So if you look at what they said before, all right, so coming back from what was said in February, corn prices are a little bit lower. Wheat prices are a little bit lower, but soybean prices, again, they're using a 980 soybean price. They would be about 90 cents higher than that, what they were using in February. So they're essentially saying the trade war is over and we're back to the 2013 to 2019 normal. If you look at what we've averaged since 2013 to 2019 on soybeans, it's 970 market year average price. This November price would be for soybeans 980, roughly equal to that. And the February forecast was about 90 cents lower than that. So
when you think about what impact that has, the ratio that is, on decisions that producers are making, not only here in Illinois, but across the Corn Belt, and I'm thinking about the maps that you produced last week, what does it tell us?
So if you look at their long run prices, 980 for corn, or excuse me, 980 for soybeans, 355 for corn. If you look at the corn soybean price rate or soybean to corn price ratio, that would be at a pretty high level, saying that soybeans, they're projecting soybeans to be more profitable than corn. So as we're looking at what farmers need to be thinking about is if this is the long run price, you know, we should probably be shading our rotations to more soybeans and less corn. And of course, there's a lot of things that go into that decision, but that would be what those prices would seem to me to indicate.
That would indicate that. But for instance, in central Illinois, where it has been a 50-50 rotation, or in northern Illinois, where it's a heavier corn rotation than soybeans, would you expect those areas to maintain that? And is it places like Indiana, Ohio, parts of Kansas, the Dakotas, that look to be more soybean-centric?
So in my opinion, you're going to see, just like we have in past, every area make the move. So Northern Illinois is probably going to be thinking about moving more closely to 50-50 corn-soybean rotation. Central Illinois, probably more towards soybeans, maybe a soybean-heavier rotation. And Southern Illinois is already at a heavier soybean rotation, so maybe we'll see more of that. It does raise a question for farmers, if you're looking particularly at Central Illinois farmers, soybeans after soybeans, what does that do to yields and what does that do to cost? And that is an issue that we're going to see as we move forward. Unless we get some new use for corn, you know, those forecasts would say we're going to see continued growth in soybean exports And that's the demand that's driving our markets at this point in time.
Do we have experience from the FBFM records about soybean on soybean and what that does or does not do?
So when we look at, we're just beginning to look at those things. What we do see is the corn, heavier corn rotations have higher machinery costs in general than those with more soybeans. Plot studies and other items would say, you know, you can do soybeans after soybeans without much, if any, yield drag. So, and we don't have much experience with multiple years of soybeans. So something that likely is going to be thought about in the future.
Gary Schnicki is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read his latest article on the FarmDoc Daily website. Look in the farm management section on the homepage. On this Wednesday afternoon, Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir. Hope things are good on your side of the street over there.
Well, they are, other than it got a lot colder last night and we had a little rainfall, but we'll talk about that in just a bit. Right. Speaking of rainfall, we've been talking about the lack thereof in South America for some time. Can you kind of give me an update, maybe start with Argentina and then we'll work our way northward through Brazil?
Yeah, absolutely. Argentina really is quite dry. The only place where there's good soil moisture is in Buenos Aires. And most of that is good down deep in the ground rather than at the surface. So from a planting perspective and emergence perspective, we're really not looking very good at all in Argentina. There will be some scattered showers and thunderstorms, though, in the westernmost parts of the country as we go forward through the next week to week and a half, and that will help to ease some long-term dryness out that way. But the bulk of key grain and oilseed producing areas in central and eastern parts of Argentina will stay dry through a big part of the next 10 days. Temperatures are going to start ebbing their way a little above average, and so the concern there is likely to rise quite a bit. Now, they are just started planting soybeans, or they should have normally just started planting soybeans a week ago. And I'm afraid it's really too dry to get that process to work very well. So maybe putting some seed in the ground, but it certainly isn't going to come up anytime soon.
As you work your way northward through South America, problems in southern Brazil or places like Uruguay that we need to discuss?
Well, you know, La Nina does have a tendency to expand this dryness that we have in Argentina into Uruguay, southern parts of Paraguay, and portions of Rio Grande do Sul. Pretty highly correlated dryness occurs in La Nina events in those areas, including Argentina. And so we're seeing kind of a classic response to the La Nina event. And yes, those areas are drying out. They may not be quite as dry as the heart of Argentina is, but they're going to get there. We don't see a lot of rain coming up for a while in those locations. Now, a little farther to the north, of course, we are seeing a little better scattering of showers and thunderstorms. One of the things I've noticed, though, the computer forecast models keep advertising much more rain than what we're actually seeing across parts of Brazil. That doesn't mean that we've got a crisis on our hands. It just means that we need to be careful to make sure that everybody gets a drink of water in a timely manner, or we may still have some expansion of concern in parts of that country. I think really for right now, we're moving in the right direction, but I would like to see one good solid drink of water for everybody. And I'm not quite ready to see that happen according to the model data, at least.
And so you don't think that'll happen, what, in the next week, the next 10 days, longer than that?
Well, I think everybody's going to get scattered showers, but the big soaking is probably going to be at least 10 days away for the bulk of the main production areas.
Here in the United States, the weather has changed again. We went through what, 8 days, I think, of record temperatures in our part of the world here. But last night, things changed pretty rapidly. And the further you go to the northwest, the colder it gets, it appears.
That's right. That's right. And we are on borrowed time at this point. We are going to have to pay the piper at some point down the road. And we are looking for several shots of pretty cold air coming up over the course of our winter season. And we'll make up for all that warmth that we had. But at least it was a good opportunity to get done with some field work and for those in urban areas to get the leaves picked up. And that was kind of nice. But we did have a lot of rain that occurred for a little while this week across the heart of the Midwest. And it did delay some of the harvest. And I think as we go forward through this next 7 to 10 days, we'll see a limited amount of precipitation. It'll be a little cooler than it has been, but we'll still have a good chance to get out there and maybe work in those fields a little bit more after a short period of drying, of course.
Anything with the wheat, the issue that we should talk about in Ukraine, Russia, parts of the former Soviet Union as it relates to going into dormancy?
Yeah, you know, the temperatures have been trending colder over there this last week to week and a half. And they did get some moisture, of course, a little bit earlier this month, and that was helpful. But they're running out of time now. The crop is moving into semi-dormancy, and so there's not going to be much opportunity for significant improvement between now and spring, which means basically that the crop still has potential to do better because whatever moisture we did get will still stimulate a little root development at some point on the warmer days. But we are going to leave that crop poorly established through the winter, and that's going to leave the door open for winter kill. And as you know, that part of the world does tend to have a lot more winter kill than we do here in the States. And so the crops will be more vulnerable to that, and we'll have to watch pretty closely as we move forward through these next few weeks.
Anything else that we should talk about? Maybe further to the east, we could take a look at China, Northern Hemisphere, of course, so they're not going into a growing season, but they do produce an awful lot of crops.
That's right. And China, you know, they had just a horrific summer this year with flooding everywhere. But the autumn has turned out to be fairly good. In the last few weeks, a good opportunity for field work to take place. The harvest is going along a little bit better. The planting of winter crops, wheat and rapeseed, is moving forward nicely. And we'll stay dry in China for another week, or actually through the weekend, I guess it is. And then next week, we've got a fairly large storm system that will move across some of their key wheat and rapeseed producing areas, moistening up the soil one more time and really helping to put the icing on the cake and ensure that that crop is going to be well established this year. The only other thing maybe worth mentioning here is that earlier this week, we did get a little rain to occur in central Kansas. And that helped to fill in a gap that had resulted in October when we got good rainfall down in Texas and Oklahoma. It kind of missed central Kansas. Well, we picked up some needed moisture there this week, and that was going to translate into some better crop establishment there. So now the driest areas in hard red winter wheat country in the U.S. are probably more confined to west central and southwest Kansas and southeastern Colorado, which incidentally is about the same place where we had trouble all of last year. So we're back to where we started.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. And we'll talk with you again next week, Drew.
You bet. Have a good week.
Hey, you too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Helped us to wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.